Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
At My Fingertips by Robin Rose Graves, with music by Fog Machine. Read by Zara Khan and Tamara Good.
I open my eyes. Before me is the waterfall, whose sound had lulled me to sleep. I am unburdened by garments. The weather, a blue sky, a radiant sun to keep my skin warm. I wade into the pool that stretches before me. The water is soft, refreshingly cool without bringing a chill to my bones. The clay floor gentle as a carpet beneath my tread. Droplets from the falls dapple my skin with beads. I press my back into the stream. It washes over me like a weighted blanket, welcoming me. I dry off on a rock heated by the sun. My toes dangle in the water, where fish the color of gold take turns kissing them. Leaves shudder in the lofty breeze. Unseen birds chirp in harmony. I peer into the canopy above, searching for them, focusing on the sound. It's familiar. I realize it's my favorite song. There is a rhythmic bass line, and when it comes to the chorus, I hear the words with perfect clarity. The lights above me in the club are as vibrant as the sun. People surround me, swaying like trees in a fierce wind along to the music. They're all so beautiful. Men and women, continuously coupling and parting in a way that makes me feel like I could choose anyone without offending another dancer by moving in on their claim. Despite being surrounded by beautiful people, I feel no less equally radiant. I, myself, have skin of reflective scales. They catch colors as I move towards the bar. A cocktail is poured for me without needing to speak. The drink tastes of fresh fruit and sunlight. No hint of alcohol, though I know it will make me feel buzzed without a hangover to come later. I observe my options. A cluster of women dance like birds in a mating ritual. It is both ostentatious and sensual. When one of them notices I am looking, she beckons me over. I finish the rest of my drink. It refills on the spot. I decide I don't want a group. Just one partner for tonight will do. He's dancing with another man, but once I come closer, he abandons his partner and offers a smile. He is painted with glitter in various stripes that accentuate his stretch marks along the pudge of his stomach. He is nothing short of stunning. Our dance is brief before it turns to kissing. My glass disappears once it becomes an inconvenience to hold. We move from the club and I'm laying in the folds of a large rose, petals that feel like velvet, supporting me in all the right places. The petal dips ever so slightly as he joins me. Our bodies connect at the obvious junction. The part of him that is inside of me becomes just as much mine as it is his, and vice versa. Our connection morphs together, tingles with pleasure as it shifts shape. Me inside of him, him inside of me. My partner alters. Breasts form under my touch and disappear again within the next moment. We finish together. He rests on top of my heated body like a cool mist after it rains. He is gone when my eyes open. I stand in a field of golden grain, rippling like waves in the wind. Their stalks tickle as they brush against my bare thighs. I decide I no longer want to be naked. My skin has returned to the umber complexion I was born with, no longer sparkling in the sunlight. A flowy white skirt covers my legs as I walk. I spot deer gazing in the distance. They acknowledge me without running away. Something touches my leg as it rustles through the wheat, a soft tail caressing my ankle. I see its white fur as it skips in front of me. A small dog. I lean down and it rushes into my arms. He is warm to hold. He is not my dog, I know this, as I know that he is looking for his owner. I am to assist him. I carry the animal out of the field and step out onto the concrete. The sandals that form beneath my feet protect me from its rough surface. Vehicles fly past, a quick smudge of color, undisturbed by my presence. I walk towards where we usually meet. She is waiting, sitting with her legs tucked beneath her, a mug warming her hands. She smiles as I approach. Seeing her happy expression makes me feel as if a field of flowers are blooming inside of me. For a moment, I mistake the source of her happiness at seeing her dog. She thanks me and offers a seat. Her smile does not fade as I sit. There is a mug waiting for me at the table. The aroma hints that it is freshly brewed, but as I raise the mug to my lips, it is not so hot that it would burn me. The roast is smooth as it goes down. I want to reach for her hand to hold, but she is too far away. Even at our small table, sitting on opposite sides, she is out of my reach. I know this without even trying. Past disappointments had me learn. We order dessert. A tart appears before me. Apple. I frown. No, I couldn't stand apple. The tart is peach. It is pleasantly sweet in contrast to the bitter coffee. The waitress collects the dirty dishes. I turn to look out the window, leaning into the cushioned seat that forms around my body. We are about to depart from the station. I catch the eyes of a little girl looking in. She follows as the train starts. A fast walk becomes a run. Inevitably, she falls behind. Scenery passes outside faster than I am able to comprehend, but the mountains revolve slowly in the distance. Out of the green, I see the pale bones of an ancient castle. I want to go towards it. I open my eyes. Before me is black glass. Empty. It surrounds me entirely. I can see my reflection weakly in it. I am naked. My hair is shaved close to my scalp. The glass divides in half and retreats. I blink as light pours in through the opening. From the ceiling, a mechanical arm reaches towards me. I shift in place. It's as much as I am able to move with all the tubes tethered to my body. The machine shines a light into my eyes. They ache in pain. My head feels bloated and sensitive, like the worst hangover. The machine says my name. It speaks with a soft, feminine voice that is too sugary for my tastes.
Hold still. I will begin the extraction process.
The voice remains the same, despite my discontent with it.
Cooperation is mandatory for a quick and painless procedure.
I have little choice. Nothing stops the machine. Needles pull from my arms. The openings they leave behind sting in the air. The machine sprays antiseptic on them before moving along. A tube is removed from where I excrete wastes. I'm strangely reminded that part of my body exists and for that purpose. This comes out with more discomfort than the others, and involuntarily I squirm from the sensation.
The worst of it is over,
the machine assures me. I'm still raw from the removal of an object where it doesn't belong. I don't like this, I say. Those words I haven't had to utter in so long, they feel odd on my lips now. Like a completely different language.
I apologize for the discomfort. It was necessary in order to take care of you. Keeping you clean. Giving your body sustenance and enabling all excess to leave.
The machine explains. This hospitality is foreign to what I've known it to be.
I will remind you that you were informed and consented to all procedures you have and will go through.
Could I see something else? I ask. Another strange sequence of words. Needing to verbalize it made my chest feel tight, in denial of what I had lost.
Disorientation is not an uncommon side effect. This will wear off in the days to come,
the machine assures me. I try to remember the last sunset and sunrise I had witnessed, but it feels like a distant dream. I exit the case I am standing in. My legs shake. I depend on the machine to assist me. It beseeches me to take it slow.
We were able to minimize muscle atrophy, but you will need physical therapy to regain what strength you have lost.
I cling to the machine. I do not recognize my surroundings. The room is circular, with pods the same size and shape as the one I have just exited, covering every inch of the room. I see three others, equally as naked and confused, humans talking to their ceiling arms, experiencing what I am experiencing. The other pods remain closed. Are the others still asleep? I ask.
Not asleep, but yes, the other pods are still in suspension. In the midst of their simulations until it becomes their time as it has become yours.
I mull this over. Slowly, information returns to my mind, though it feels so distant I think I must have dreamed it. Have we arrived?
No. Our ETA is 1 year, 3 months and 12 days.
What am I supposed to do in the meantime?
You are expected to resume your duties as a tertiary essential employee.
I frown. While I will be working, others will be experiencing bliss. The machine somehow tunes into my thoughts.
This is fair, as you are now mobile. Everyone else is locked in partial awareness, awake but unable to move. The simulations were enjoyable to experience. This was our design, to make the century of conscious hibernation tolerable, comfortable. Your wife has been reactivated last week. Your daughter is scheduled for reactivation several months from now.
The machine informs me. The words wife and daughter strike me as odd. I spent what felt like an eternity alone, but slowly I recall her face, her brown eyes, her soft body. Have I changed much? I ask, wondering if she could still love what I had become, or had her simulations raised her expectations to ones I no longer met.
Your aging has been slow during the procedure. You will notice regular aging processes will resume within the upcoming weeks.
Have they changed? I ask. Remembering how small my daughter had been, merely a toddler.
More noticeably so.
I am guided through a tunnel where a cold mist is sprayed from unseen spigots. I despise the feeling of it against my skin. Water finds the pinprick holes in my body. The first human face I see is that of the person who hands me a plain white jumpsuit, similar to the one he is wearing. I slip into it, along with the shoes provided. I steal glances towards his face. It's unflattering, whether or not only a trick of the light. I can see dark circles beneath his eyes, a hairline that has begun to recede. He holds no charm in his face, and I catch myself with the cruel thought that he is the ugliest person I have ever seen. Simultaneously, I am fascinated with his existence. No longer am I surrounded by faces generated for my own taste. I am guided to my quarters. Orientation is tomorrow. The ship's AI will ensure that I won't forget. Finding the room occupied alarms me. A single woman, in the same white jumpsuit, her brown hair beginning to grow out from being shaved. It is her eyes that make my heart start again. My wife.
Darling.
Her lips pull into a smile. I feel like I'm walking through the sanitation shower again. The pet name is unfamiliar. We embrace, but our bodies do not naturally match together like they once did. She places a kiss on my cheek that I don't return. I don't remember you calling me that before, I say. She laughs.
We've just been reactivated. You must still be disoriented.
Her words are unnatural, as if she is reading a script. Dinner consists of a thick and lumpy gray paste. It is all texture and no taste. The ship's AI insists I must consume it all. The nutrients are imperative to regaining my full functionality. I try to pretend it is a peach tart, but no amount of imagining can create flavor where there is none. Won't there at least be dessert? Coffee? I ask my wife, over the first meal we've shared in person in years. She shakes her head. A charming laugh dances from her lips.
Terrible, right?
She says.
It hasn't got much easier to stomach, though I keep telling myself it will with time.
She takes a sudden disinterest in the meal upon my comment.
Oh, that food I used to have in simulation, it was always delicious. Always something you had made, just like being at home.
She says.
Did you ever dream of me?
I think about the girl in the coffee shop who shared the same face as her, though younger, much younger, long before we ever signed up for this one-way trip. And then I think about every pretty face in the club, how many of them I had gotten to know in bed. Were you able to see what I was dreaming before they reactivated me? I ask. I see the way her face twitches, irked by the question and my poorly disguised evasion. She looks down at her mush.
No,
she says.
I asked, but it was a violation of privacy.
Silence. Why did you call me darling? It has been hours since my initial reactivation, yet still that question wouldn't give me peace.
Maybe we should agree that we've both grown in hibernation. We've both had experiences that happened without each other that we might not fully understand.
This agreement brings me no satisfaction, but it seems to be the only way to move forward. The mush doesn't grow any more appealing as the days pass. Therapy makes my muscles ache more than I see results. The water is harsh when I go for my sanitation showers. I smell horrid if I choose to skip them. I sleep next to my wife, but we might as well still be stuck in separate pods. I cringe every time she slips up and calls me darling, despite a conscious effort not to.
Maybe it'll be better once our child is with us,
she says. Why would you say that? I ask. She would be miserable. No place to play. No meals made with love. Just an endless maze of pods. I may no longer be a child, but I feel her imagined frustrations as my own. Who knows if it'll be any different when we arrive?
We never should have left.
There's no use in wondering if we should or shouldn't have. There's no going back now, I say. I am trying to convince myself as much as I am her. I watch as she leans her chin on her hand.
Simulations would really take the edge off this, better than alcohol could.
Her charming laugh brings a bitter taste to my mouth.
Not that there's a single drop of alcohol on the ship. I checked.
I didn't realize you missed the simulations so much, I say, heart pounding in chest.
Well, don't sound so proud, as if you didn't enjoy your time in the simulations as well.
My mind fills with the color red. Velvety petals. Skin against skin. No end nor beginning. If you miss it so much, why don't you go back to your pod?
As if I haven't already tried.
She confesses. Her anger stings me and brings tears to her own eyes. She cries for someone she misses, and I can't help but wonder who. When, I ask. She won't meet my eyes. Before I was reactivated? Still no response. What about the kid? You would have just left her? What if I chose to be just as selfish? She would be orphaned. The anger builds and swells. The selfishness from someone I once knew to be altruistic. Knowing but denying that I would have reacted the same. That I am reacting the same.
I woke up surrounded by machinery. I didn't have you.
And do you feel differently now? Because it sounds as if you still want to go back. She stands.
Like you said, there is no going back.
I watch as she leaves the room. I expect to see her in bed, but it's empty. I lay without her and allow our conversation to replay in my mind. Everything feels sour. I've learned to be unfamiliar with consequences and no longer know how to ease this feeling of discomfort. I long for the pods and the simulations, the lack of problems and disagreement, every need met within an instant. Suddenly, I know where my wife is. What was their name? I ask as I approach. She stands before our daughter in her pod. Despite her being much smaller, her pod is the same size as the one I was in. Darlings, I clarify. Our daughter is nearly unrecognizable, almost a preteen now.
Does it matter?
You remarried? I assume. Her eyes remain on our daughter. When I dreamt about you, we were back to who we were when we first got together. Other than that, I spent most of my time with others, or alone.
This trip was supposed to be good for us.
Exasperation and disappointment in her voice. Having a kid was supposed to be good for us, I say. Now I think we only made another person to be miserable with us.
What has she been through?
She asks, but I have no answer.
She's grown so much. We're adults, and yet can barely handle the reality. How is she ever going to manage?
Kids are supposedly more adaptable to change.
Who is this person? Who are you or I?
Her eyes are wide with fear as she turns towards me.
Would she even recognize me? I mean, we barely thought about each other while we were under.
I am without answers. Instinct tells me to comfort my wife, but I'm not sure how or if it's even possible. You're right, I say. You were right all along. We should have never come here. We should have never put her through any of this. I expect her to be smug. She focuses on the pod, not looking directly at her daughter, but off to the side.
We can't put her through more hardship,
my wife says. She reaches, and suddenly I see what she was looking at. Her fingers wrap around a bundle of exposed wires. What are you? My heart thunders. Her eyes are glassy.
We can't save ourselves.
I suppress the urge to call for help. Surely the AI is watching. It would intervene. I step closer to her, and much to my surprise, she holds her ground. I don't forgive you, I say, and fold my hand over hers. Together, we pull. Instantaneously, an alarm wails out. The pod's life support is failing. I see the strange preteen girl twist in discomfort, as if she is having a nightmare. I count my racing heartbeats until someone inevitably finds us. There is nowhere to hide, so we stay with our daughter, hand in hand. She squeezes until her knuckles are white and hurts mine. The pain feels right. For one moment, just before the doors open and we will be discovered, all movement stops.
An off-the-record letter to the people watching back home by Jean-Paul L. Garnier, with music by Red, Blue, Black, Silver, read by the author. An off-the-record letter to the people watching back home. Everyone knows that it takes a long time to get anywhere traveling through space. Even at light speed, the trips are long. You see pictures of us spinning in circles, catching floating globes of water. You think that's all we do? Now you imagine us standing around consoles, turning knobs and watching blinking lights. Jeez, you've seen too many movies. How many hours of the day do you think we spend on that kind of crap? Well, I can tell you, while I have turned some knobs and flicked some switches in my life, computers are better suited for this work. We're mostly here to prove it's possible, to see if we can really leave and eventually stay somewhere. We look for paradise in the ever-greatening darkness. Anyway, we still have lives and do regular stuff. In fact, most of our days are much like yours, with the exception that we probably put in more hours. The main difference is that there is no privacy, tight quarters at best. The endless noise of the machines covers up voices if you let it, but we are almost never outside of visual contact with each other. The TV is fond of saying that we eat together, that bonding at mealtime and close proximity is good for the psyche. That's the TV-friendly version anyway. Yeah, we do that, but that's not all. We can leave for the stars, but we can't leave human needs behind. We bring all that stuff with us. What do you see in your mind's eye now? I'll bet, all of a sudden, you started thinking about spaceflight as boring. Obviously, you don't know us very well. Don't worry, it's not your fault. The propaganda, the radio dispatches they let you hear, and those dumb films of us eating water out of the sky, yeah. It all makes us look pretty apple pie. Do you really think that would work? It wouldn't. While our daily activities are much the same as yours, we can't go anywhere, and there is no privacy. I can see you shuddering now. For us, it's no problem. The solution was simple. Our crew, and they don't want you to know this, is polyamorous. We're all exhibitionists and voyeurs. The lack of privacy can be a real turn-on. And when we're done twiddling knobs for education videos, we're busy with a healthy and rigorous sex life. Don't feel like joining in? Go ahead and watch. Now you're seeing million-dollar money shots in your head. Calm down. Strict protocol for stuff like that. but we're active. Wouldn't you be if you had so much time to kill? None of the crew discriminate much. Keeps us from getting bored or developing resentments. A little of this, a little of that. But you won't see that in the films. They don't want you to know that your tax dollars lead to so much fun, and all without American values. After all, we're about as far from America as you can get. In this episode of Simultaneous Times, you heard At My Fingertips by Robin Rose Graves, with music by Fog Machine, and An Off-the-Record Letter to the People Watching Back Home by Jean-Paul L. Garnier, with music by Red Blue Black Silver. Theme music by Dane Luscombe. 2020 is almost over, and we made it, but we miss all of your beautiful faces at the shop. This holiday season, Space Cowboy Books has a free gift for our listeners. Go to spacecowboybooks.bandcamp.com to get your free audiobook/ebook download of Beetlejuice Dimming, your host Jean-Paul Garnier's new book of speculative poetry, with music by our regular contributors Red, Blue, Black, Silver, and Field Collapse. And make sure to visit our online store at bookshop.org/shop/Space Cowboy Books. We wish you the best of holidays. And get in touch with us on Twitter and Instagram. We'd love to know what you think of the show.